The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined here in the studio by Ali Moreno and Shaka Hislop. And we will start by talking about sixth place Manchester United, who have confirmed that Erik ten Hag will be the next United manager, joining in the summer on a three-year deal with the option of a further year. Don and Jules now joining us. Don, is this the right move?
It is the right move, but he's got a job on, massive job on. I remember when Peter Bosch was doing really well at Ajax and he moved to Dortmund and he bombed there, he bombed at Leverkusen. Now he's under pressure at Lyon. But it feels like the right move. He's got to be given total control. He's got to do it his way. He's going to have to be strong. He's got some big egos to contend with. He's going to have to get lots of people out the door and then whatever money he's got, bring quality players in that want to work hard and represent Man United. But I just feel as though it's going to take time. The yardstick, I don't think, for Man United, and even their fans would say now, the yardstick's not Man City and it's not Liverpool and Chelsea. Their level is competing for one spot, and that's fourth. Four, five or six spots in the Premier League. That's where they're competing at. Forget the top three, they're well clear. So they're going to have to be patient, and he's got a huge job on.
Yeah, Jules, big job on his hands. Do you agree with Don that it's the right move?
Only time will tell. Of course, on paper, and we've all loved his Ajax team and the job that he's been doing. And in terms of a tactical brain, he's amazing. There's no doubt that he's an elite coach. You see when Ajax play, whether it's in the Champions League, whether it's in the league, the way that team plays, the identity, the movement with the ball, without the ball, all of that is fantastic. The press, the counter press, all of that is all great. We all love it. This is perfect. There's a difference between doing that at Ajax when you've been there for 5 years with players that you can mold in exactly what you want, especially the younger ones who already come out of the academy at such a good level, and going to United where, you know, the club has been sinking for the last 8-9 years now since Sir Alex left. And that's a completely different job. This is not a similar job. I'm not even sure that right now anyone can take on that job. Erik ten Hag may well succeed, and we hope for him that he does. But right now, no one can tell us he will succeed. Like no one could tell us that Jurgen Klopp or even Pep Guardiola would succeed, because the club is such in a bad way that it's hard. And I agree with Don. It will take a lot of time. It will take a lot of money. It will take a lot of patience. And for once, they will need to have that patience. The Glazers, Richard Arnold, everybody who decides at that football club will have to leave him alone, let him work, give him the players that he wants, give him the time that he needs, give him everything he wants to make that club a successful club again. But unless they do that, even Ten Hag at his best, with all the tactical genius that he has, will not succeed.
Well, the man currently in the role is interim coach Ralf Rangnick, and he was pretty dismissive of his side after their latest loss to Liverpool. Speaking after the game, he said, "If you analyse the team, it needs a rebuild. There are 6, 8, maybe 10 new players.
Oh.
And before you sign them, you need to be aware what kind of football does the new manager want to play and then fit into that kind of profile." Your reaction to what he said here, Shaka?
He's right. In that, if we are going to be talking about Manchester United in the same breath with the Liverpools and Man Cities, it is going to take 10 players. But that's far easier said than done, especially even for a club like Manchester United. Because while you need to get in 10 players, that means that they're... You could make a very easy argument that probably the only player on the pitch against Liverpool who should still be there is David De Gea. You could make that quite easily. But now you have a number of players who you need to get rid of. Or I don't see how or why they stay at United if they aren't in the reckoning. And the truth is, I don't see who takes those players on, especially with the wages that they command. So it's a double-edged sword for Ten Hag. How does he move players on in an effort to get the players that, that he wants in. I'm not sure how anybody does that math.
It's funny to hear Ralf Rangnick going through the mental exercise in which he's given the statement and he said, well, I think we're going to need six. Okay, no. It's more than six. Probably eight. No, I think it's more than that, actually. It's about 10 guys. We got to, you know what? We need a whole new team. And honestly, when you are the manager in place and you're saying these things and the players are listening to this, now they're doing the mental math themselves. They're doing the mental exercise. Like, am I one of those guys? Probably I am. And you start looking out for yourself. You no longer care about what's going on currently in the team. You look out for yourself and you start wondering, where is my future? Is it going to be here? If it's not here, then where is it going to be? And what do I need to do to take care of my career?
Yeah, so far, obviously, that consultancy role ahead for Ralf Rangnick at Manchester United. Guys, we're going to play something of a game. We're going to have a board meeting, and you are all our board members.
Okay.
We're going to help Ralf Rangnick out here.
Okay.
We're going to get some players out at Manchester United, and none of you are allowed to pick the same players when we do this.
Wow.
So, Jules, I'll start with you and ask you two players that need to be gone come the summer from Manchester United.
Well, I'm glad you start the board meeting by the with the most intelligent guy in the room, of course. So I will go with... I mean, you have to start, you know. Cristiano Ronaldo, to start with, I'm sorry. We all love the story and the romantic side of it, of him going back to the club where you pretty much all started, all of that, all the goals, great, the two hat-tricks, the last two hat-tricks, wonderful, but this is not going to work. It's not going to work with Ten Hag. I don't think he would work with anyone else either. I'm not saying he's been a problem this season or not the problem or the solution, whatever, but this debate is over anyway now. I think he needs to move on. And the second one, and I don't want to pick on him and what happened today to Harry Maguire is not nice, but I think Harry Maguire, for his own career, I think for everybody, needs a move. He needs to go somewhere else, maybe in an environment that is a bit more calm and less under pressure. But yeah, I would pick Cristiano and Maguire.
Ale, glaringly obvious that our French board member here didn't pick Paul Pogba to be going out. His picks there,
of course.
Maguire. You're next, Ale.
Ah, well, let me start with Paul Pogba. Here you go. And it feels like he's been gone for a while now, and that this has been coming, and it felt like every transfer window the conversation was there. Well, Paul Pogba's not a fit. It's not a Manchester United player. Hasn't been successful enough. Doesn't care about Manchester United. Cares about the French national team, but can't quite translate those performances with Manchester United and the bench in important games. So he gone, right? And then after that, it's tricky. Because you can go in so many different directions, and there are obvious players that are going to walk out the door anyways, and I was thinking in the same line as Jules with Cristiano Ronaldo, that it's a tough decision, but no coach wants to walk into that locker room and have to deal with that when you're trying to build into the future. So I agree with Cristiano Ronaldo, but given the fact that Jules has already taken him, I'm just going to do a combo package. How about Lindelof? Out the door. See you later. We already know what that guy is. We know what he is. Everybody, get out. See you later. We don't need you either because we already know what you are and you're not good enough for this club. Move on.
Oh, he's had in a few here. He's
oh, no, we can keep going. If you want to. I have a whole list.
No, I'm interested. Jules, how far down your list would Paul Pogba be?
Contractually, I can't go there. I'm sorry. Like, you know, I would make him captain, give him the number 10. He can play in any position he wants, even goalkeeper, of course.
Okay, French Union. Shaki, you're next.
The truth is, Kate, it'd be easier to ask everybody to keep a player. Because we could line that entire Manchester United roster up and ship out everybody bar maybe two. David De Gea and maybe.
Hey, man, just follow instructions.
No, I'm just saying.
Pick your two players and we move on.
Pick two. I'll go Varane.
You on my list?
Hold on, I'll go Varane because Jules is.
I got a list.
Jules is contractually obligated not to pick on French players. So I'll go Rafael Varane. And then Phil Jones. This is how easy this is. I mean, have your pick, and that's the challenge for Ten Hag here.
All right. Well, the challenge now is for Don to decide who hasn't already been said that he's going to kick out.
I mean, Jules has gone in with the most intelligent, and now you've come to the most emotional. So in this board meeting, I have a cup of coffee or a hot chocolate, and I'm like, get rid of a lot of them. They're not good enough. So I'm going to go with, because I read today, I don't know if it's true, but I read today that Erik ten Hag's got a war chest of 200 million, and he's going to try and get 10 players in on 200 million. So I'm going to try and raise him some funds. And Anthony Martial, there's a player that you might be able to get. Jules might know his transfer fee. I reckon you're looking at about 30 million-ish. So I would say Anthony Martial. And the other one would be the guy who's using Man United at the moment as a gym just to be fit for Uruguay, Cavani.
All right. Yeah, another Frenchman there that Jules failed to mention. Jules, are you hearing something similar with regards to figures that he may have to spend, Erik ten Hag, when it comes to helping rebuild this side?
Yeah, I think it would be something around that amount. I think it will also depend a lot on who's leaving, because again, if Cristiano leaves the club and his wages are a third of the wage bill, it frees a lot of space that if he doesn't leave, won't be freed, and you will have to deal with it differently. So I think it depends also a lot on the clearance and the clear out that you're going to make happen this summer. And I think they're very focused on that already, trying to find clubs for the ones who are still under contract. Unfortunately for some of them, the one out of contract is a no-brainer, they're going. But yeah, let's say between 150 and 200 million is probably what the club is ready to go and spend. And obviously that can be even higher if you sell, and if you sell well, the likes of Martial and maybe, I don't know, people like Wan-Bissaka, I don't know, the ones who still have some sort of value there, despite everything that happens. So the money will be there. The money is not a problem. The thing is now to find the right players that will fit in what Ten Hag wants to do and wants to implement at the club, which might be tricky. We were saying with Gab this morning on our show, how much will Ten Hag be involved? Is he going to be involved in every step of the way from the start, saying, okay, I want this guy, and actually naming a Darwin Nunez or Aurelien Tchouameni or Jules Koundé, whatever? Or is he going to give profiles and then Fletcher and Mertu are going to come back with a list of 5 or 10 names and then they will go through it together? Will he be not involved completely until the end? But what cannot happen is another Donny van de Beek, where they sign a player that the manager doesn't want, because again, that was a problem before, and we can't have a repeat of those kind of problems.
I understand what Jules is saying, but there's a lack of honesty in his statement. He said, we were saying in our show, Gab and Jules, we know that Jules doesn't get to talk in that show. It's not we were saying, it was Gab was saying, and Jules was nodding.
They're actually a little bit feisty on the latest one. They usually do have a bit of a debate, particularly on this one, so make sure to check out the latest show if you haven't already. Jules, just talking about that, though, what's your thoughts on how long a process like that could take, and could it actually get worse before it gets better?
Well, I want to believe that with a pre-season and a good summer in terms of recruitment, and again, I know it's a cliche, of course, but the sooner they get those players, the better, of course. If they can arrive on July the 1st, when the pre-season starts, it's much better than if they arrive on August the 31st, like Cristiano did last summer, for example. So that will be key, and then I would want to believe that even if Ten Hag cannot make miracles, and I think we all agree on that, you could see quite quickly, certainly structurally, then players make mistakes. We see that with a lot of the young, upcoming, very talented managers like Xavi, like Arteta, like those kind of guys, that even if structurally and tactically a lot of things make sense, if you don't have good players implementing your plan, then they're going to make mistakes and it's going to cost you games, etc., etc. But you would think that tactically and structurally, you could see a big difference quite quickly. How quickly? It's hard to tell, but in terms of full results, having consistency over the whole season, being able to compete and win big games, for example, against top teams, I think we will have to wait for that. I don't think it's a big shift like we see with Conte or like we saw with Tuchel when they arrived mid-season at clubs like Chelsea and Spurs. This is way harder, even if he has a pre-season to work on, because the squad is it's so bad right now, and it's going to go through so many changes. If 12 leave and 12 arrive, imagine how difficult it would be for all those new guys to gel, plus the new manager, the new tactics and everything. I think it will take time. We can't say it's a year or 2 years or 3 years or four or whatever, but he will need time, and it will take time.
Don, let's talk about if 12 arrive, if all these new players arrive, because if you're a top player in the world right now, or at least a player with huge potential, and Manchester United don't finish in the top four, but you know Ten Hag's come in, do you want to go there?
You read my mind, Kate, because when Jules was talking there, I was thinking Harry Kane, and I was thinking, you know, if Tottenham get top four and Man United miss out on top four, does Harry Kane even want to go to Man United, where maybe 12 months ago he was linked with Man City, and this summer he's... The last couple of months he's been linked with Man United. Tottenham now are in a far better place with a better manager. There's more structure at Tottenham than there is at Man United. So it's a great question. It's a club that players will, especially young players, they'll want to join. They'll look at Ten Hag, they'll look at Man United, they'll look at the wages. They've brought players in the past like Alexis Sanchez, Ronaldo, Harry Maguire when other teams wanted them. So it's still a big club. Players probably don't really think, oh, I wonder how long it's going to take before we win trophies. They don't really think, oh, it might take 5, 6, 7 windows. It might take 3 or 4 years. They go there because they back themselves, they back the manager, they back the club to do the right thing. I would suggest they look at players like Christopher Nkunku, that sort of profile, where young, hungry players that are doing well, that wouldn't cost necessarily an arm and a leg. And then Ten Hag can try and mould these players. He shouldn't be looking for fantasy signings, more big names that everyone knows around the world, but you're not sure what you're going to get. I said it loosely a couple of months back, and the lads ripped me when I said Galactico players, because half these Man United players think they're actually better than they are. So the profile of the player has to be perfect.
Okay, well, we know things are a lot rosier at Manchester City right now, and if they win out, they will be Premier League champions. Again, just taking a look at the odds to win the Premier League here, just the point between themselves and Liverpool. Pablo is with us. Win out and they're champions, as mentioned, Pablo. But when you see the list of games that Man City still have to play, is there one for you that stands out that might be the most difficult of them?
Well, you know, every single game in the Premier League is really difficult. If you look, Wolves away, from home, even West Ham playing well this season, Newcastle is in a good form. I mean, you never know. I think Pep was really clear after the game against Brighton. It's everything depends on us. You know, if we keep winning all the games, we're champions. At the end of the season, that's the best thing they can do. You know, just focus on the next game. It's going to be amazing, you know, that end of the season with Liverpool, both teams just pushing each other. I mean, in the way they've both been playing recently, even Liverpool, I think, better than Man City. But I do believe that Man City will keep winning all the games and, finger crossed that they will be champions.
Are you confident they're going to win it, Pablo?
Yes, I'm confident. Absolutely. I think they have the quality, to win all the games. But when you look at Liverpool, it's going to be difficult. I mean, they need to be perfect from now until the end of the season. I mean, they still have Champions League, both of them, but I'm really optimistic. I think, Man City, if you look at the remaining fixture, they can beat all of them.
Don, we know this can change on a weekly basis, but we are asking you your percentage chance on Liverpool winning it.
No.
Liverpool to win the Premier League title.
No.
Liverpool to win it. I think it's a 49 for them, 51 City. And I'm back in Liverpool. I'm back in Liverpool, Kay. I think they've got momentum. I think what I've seen in Liverpool in the last couple of games, especially when they tore Man City apart in the first 45 minutes of the semi-final. And I thought, and it's a low bar, and people might say, yeah, but it's only Man United. I thought the zip was back in their play. I thought the standard, I thought Mo Salah was ridiculous. I could go through the whole team. I just think momentum's with them. They look ruthless. They look as though they could turn anyone over. Tottenham's their hardest game. And I think for Man City, in between the Real Madrid games, I think it was Leeds and Newcastle, that might be tough. But I think West Ham's second last game of the season, that'll be hard for them. West Ham have got a good record against Man City of late.
Now, Don just gave us every reason as to why Liverpool is going to win this thing, right?
Except for the percentage.
Except for the percentage. I'm back in Liverpool, but I'm making them underdogs. I don't understand it.
Because City have got a point lead, Ali. City are a point in front.
But you say you're back in Liverpool. So how are they 49% then?
Back in the underdog.
Yeah,
that's all I was saying.
Oh, those plucky underdogs. Liverpool.
Yes. That would be the good underdog story.
Yes.
Anyway.
I wonder if Liverpool's going to be able to make it, if they're going to be okay.
Liverpool's still in with a shot at the quadruple this season. Those plucky underdogs. Yes. They will be taking on Chelsea.
It's a little engine that could.
In the FA Cup final, Saturday, May 14th, the game you'll be able to see right here on ESPN Plus. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Now, Thomas Tuchel partly blamed Chelsea's 4-2 loss to Arsenal on the state of the pitch. He said, to say the pitch is difficult to play here, it maybe sounds like an excuse,
but it
is a very, very difficult pitch that we have here.
What?
It's not in our favour. The ball bounces very awkwardly in front of Andreas when he wanted to play this ball. Jules, you were at this game. How did the pitch look to you?
It looked amazing. And to be fair, I arrived really early as well, and I was pitch side talking to some of the boys, and the pitch that I didn't walk on it, I didn't have the studs on, I didn't go where Christensen missed that pass, for example. Is it also the pitch that is to blame for the third goal, you know, when Thiago Silva tackles and then it's sort of like pinballs everywhere and then Nketiah scored? Is it for that? Is it the pitch to blame for Azpilicueta sort of rugby tackling a very smart Bukayo Saka? I mean, I was amazed when Tuchel started talking about the pitch. I was like, come on, please do me a favour. It's not the first time that, you know, Chelsea have made mistakes, and I don't think it's got much to do with the pitch.
A life's a pitch and then you lose, Shaka. What did you make of his comments?
I honestly don't know what to make of it. Listen, pitches play differently, right? And sometimes you go to fields and the ball bounces differently and it's awkward. You can't use that for your home pitch, where you play 50%. You play 50% of your season's games on this very field. And at this juncture, with, well, three home games left in the season, you haven't figured that pitch out yet. I'm sorry. Thomas, you've lost me entirely.
It's the spin of the ball, Shaq. The spin of the ball, Shaq.
Alrighty.
You know, actually, in his quote, he went further and he started saying that he alluded to the goal by Real Madrid, the third goal against Chelsea in Chelsea. What does the feel have anything to do with Antonio Rudiger not going through Karim Benzema and going through the ball and clearing the danger? What does it have to do with Edouard Mendy taking a bad touch on the ball and misplaying the pass to Antonio Rudiger? It has nothing to do with the feel. And the first thing that he said is the only accurate thing that he said in that whole statement is, this may sound like an excuse. Yes, yes, Thomas, it sounds like an excuse. It is an excuse.
All right. Well, Don actually called this game. What was this game down to then? Was it Arsenal very good or Chelsea very bad, Don?
Both. I thought Saka was absolutely brilliant. He tore Marcus Alonso to shreds most of the evening. He was fantastic. And Nketiah got a chance and scored a couple. It had nothing to do with the pitch. The only way Thomas Tuchel could come out after a game, not a game against Arsenal, who scored brilliant goals, if it's a cup tie, and they've just played like a non-league team who had nothing about them, and they smashed it in the box and they made it ugly, and it was a little bit spinny and it was a little bit dirty, then you can go, yeah, the pitch was a problem tonight. Look at the Arsenal goals. Look how good they were. Look at Smith-Rowe's goal, the way Arsenal played out from the back. I think Granit Xhaka had a nutmeg on the edge of his box. The zippiness from Arsenal and their passing, and then Smith-Rowe finishes off at the end. Arsenal was sensational. I didn't see it coming. On the back of three defeats on the spin, I thought it's going to be four. So to go to the bridge when they haven't been scoring goals and put four past them was an incredible performance by them. But Thomas Tuchel blaming the pitch, I mean, ludicrous.
Jules, Spurs are still the favourites to finish fourth in this battle for the top four. But did Arsenal's performance convince you otherwise?
I have to say I was really impressed, especially with the structure they had of the ball. You know, when you come to Stamford Bridge, especially since Tuchel arrived, how good Chelsea can play with the ball. And I thought Arsenal, the way they defended without the ball was fantastic. I'm not even going into details of the back five and then back four, etc. Ben White, right back, all of that. But they just were so well organized. Xhaka commanded everything. And then he was really good, I thought, in the way that the ground that he covered and the intelligence that he had on the pitch. I just thought off the ball, they were fantastic. And I was sat so close behind Mikel Arteta. And I have to say, he impressed me too in the way that he had prepared for everything that Chelsea had, especially the wide players, and they blocked them so well going forward, especially or quite well, to be fair. So I was really impressed. It would be very tight, and that game at the Tottenham Stadium on May 12th might well be the final for that fourth place, and whoever wins that will finish fourth. But I was really impressed, and I do think that they've regained the momentum that they had lost a little bit before with the defeats against Brighton and Southampton and Crystal Palace, of course. But again, the game this weekend will be huge against United, because United are not completely out of it if they can win at the Emirates on Saturday and lunchtime for us here in the UK.
If you had to say so now, though, Jules, are Arsenal finishing fourth?
Yeah, I've said it from the beginning, so I have to, you know, I really believe that win at Chelsea is huge in terms of confidence, psychologically, for the momentum. You know, they will hopefully have a fully fit Lacazette now coming back after COVID. If maybe you can get Tomiyasu at some point and Partey before the end of the season, I don't think we will see Tierney again, but certainly the other two, that's a big bonus, and then I think they can have a very strong end of the season. So I'll go Arsenal to finish fourth.
Don, what are your thoughts on it?
This is even my man Maths would say this is a 50-50. When you look at the fixtures, I mean, how are you trying to pick the bones of who's going to win, who's going to draw, who's going to lose? I've got a sneaky feeling for Tottenham, but it's wide open.
There's no underdog. No underdogs, and Don's lost.
But did you sense the nervous energy from Don when he said, well, it's 50-50? Yes, I'm going to say 50-50. That adds to 100.
I didn't even ask him outright the percentage that answer, but he gave me one anyway. Xhaka picked Tottenham yesterday. Ale, did Arsenal's performance and Jules's pledge for Arsenal convince you that Arsenal can do it?
It convinced me that they can do it. But they're not gonna. You know, I have an interesting relationship with Spurs fans over the years, and I'm gonna pick them. So be careful, Spurs. I am picking you to finish top four. Good luck with that.
What? A kiss of death?
What's happened with your relationship with Spurs fans?
Well, it's been up and down.
Oh, okay.
More down than up.
Well, you know, relationships have their ups and downs. They do. Yes.
Might be okay, more up at the moment, but if they don't finish fourth, they're going to all blame you.
What?
Gab and Jules' latest podcast is out, as I mentioned. There's a good debate on there between the two of them. Mm. And yes, Jules does actually get a win.
What? Right. Right. Yes, I'm so proud of you. He's growing up.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Barcelona returned to winning ways on Thursday night with a 1-0 result over Real Sociedad. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang with the only goal of the game. Barcelona probably getting lucky and getting away with a late penalty decision going in their favour against Eric Garcia. To talk more about this game, we'll now welcome in Jules Laran and Pablo Zabaleta. Pablo, what's your take on what you saw today from Barcelona?
Well, that was a good performance. They're not being great, but at the end of the day, it's job done for them, especially after a difficult week. You know, they were eliminated from the Europa League, then a short defeat to Cadiz at home. So they needed to get, back to winning ways, 3 points. As Xavi said in the press conference, Champions League is massive for them next season. So, they got it right. Good 20 minutes of the first half, give them a chance to take the lead. And then, a clean sheet was key for them to win the game.
Ali, would you agree with Pablo?
No, but I would love Pablo to be my teacher in school because his standard of good is quite low. I have to be honest with you. Barcelona were barely, and I mean barely, hanging on in the second half. And Ter Stegen's having to come up with a kick save. With Sorloth is missing chances left and right. Isak is missing chances as well. All the pressure was on Barcelona. And what was most surprising today from Barcelona is their inability to get a hold of the ball. Something that we think is second nature for this team. Well, not so much today. In the second half, Barcelona could not get a hold of the ball, could not complete 3 passes in a row, and it was all Real Sociedad all the time. So if you're Real Sociedad and you watch this game over, you're going to ask yourself 1,000 questions as to how you lost this match. Barcelona, fortunate, and I mean fortunate, to get 3 points. The only thing that I agree with and with Pablo is that it is an important 3 points for Barcelona, given the trend that they had set over the last few games. But the performance was not quite there, and this is not the way that Barcelona improves into the future. The thing you hang on to is that you show some toughness, you show some character, that guys were getting injured, and yet you pulled it off. That you should be encouraged about if you're Barcelona. Other than that, forget it. This was not a good game.
And the defensive problems, Jules, definitely not encouraging. When you see that those defenders coming out injured in this one, it feels as though Barcelona will be limping over the line in this top four race.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, even before they got injured, they were not very good, full stop. I think they were too exposed and they conceded too many chances. I'm more on Ali's camp than Pablo, although I would love Pablo as a teacher as well. But defensively, this is just not good enough. And we saw against Frankfurt, it was not good enough. And tonight, again, it's not good enough. But you're right, the injuries, Dani Alves, Piqué as well, we're not sure, but he looked like he had a groin problem just before the break and then stayed on for a little bit more. Araujo certainly looks the worst of them all, to be fair. Even Jordi Alba at some point had when Isak got yellow carded, something with his knee, maybe it was a bit of time wasting, but maybe also tiredness. And it's been a long season, it's been a tough season for them, and certainly the last few games have been really tough. I don't know what kind of back four Xavi will be able to put at the weekend. Maybe Samuel Umtiti can have a chance. I mean, the only way Umtiti can play is if everybody's out, and it looks like a lot of them are out. Longley will be there, Des will be there, but it won't be easy, and especially when defensively it's been a struggle for them. So now to have all of them missing is a huge crisis that you don't really want at this time of the season.
Pablo, do you think that Eric Garcia got away with something today with that penalty not being given? Because it's not the first time, as Ali mentioned, we've seen him at fault for a penalty being given away.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know why Eric defended like that inside the box. You know, he made a penalty last week in the Europa League game, something very similar, which, as a defender sometimes, when you are inside the ball, you want to use the arm to push a little bit, the opponent, but you cannot do this, against, you cannot grab your opponent like that because, it's very dangerous doing this inside the penalty box. So, he was very lucky. I was just looking at the clip now, and you know, as more as you see, he's been, you know, lucky not to concede a penalty.
One thing must be said, though, is it's not an easy ground to score at Anoeta, as we can see from their stats this season. But, Jules, once again, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has managed to now get his 9th goal in 11 appearances. That's some tally for him at Barca.
That is incredible, really. And that's, I guess, that's, this is why he's there, to score those goals. This one is a you know, a Moreno special, to be fair. I think a lot of us would have scored it, but still, he was in the right place at the right time. This is good. Apart from the goal, there was nothing from him. And I would think that a Barca number 9 has to be more involved, especially when your team is under pressure, can't do 3 passes together, can't hold the ball up. In the second half, he disappeared completely. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done, but certainly in terms of pure statistics and pure numbers, he has delivered massively, probably more than we all expected, even himself included, after joining the club. That's outstanding. But I still want more from him, want more in the build-up play, in the linker play, especially when the team is under pressure. Because tonight, apart from the goal, I didn't think he did well enough or did enough to help the team.
And I think what Jules is saying there is really important, particularly in a game like today, where they were getting out-possessed through the midfield, where they were losing the ball in key areas, and they were under pressure. In the second half, there's a moment in which you bypass that pressure. So the guys up top, the front three, have to be able to hold the ball up, and Aubameyang, in particular, has to be able to hold the ball up. Dembele has to be able to hold it up and take the attack into an area where they can feel comfortable, where they can release some pressure. Instead, what these guys do, the front three for Barcelona, when they lose possession of the ball in the midfield, this front three get disconnected. They're no longer part of the play defensively, and they're no longer part of the play offensively. It's almost as if, unless we have the ball in a good area where we're going in 1v1 situations, where we're attacking together, we do not get involved. Well, no, job is not done. Your team is under pressure, and at some point you have to sacrifice yourself, hold the ball up, and allow then your team to catch up, and then you can combine in the attacking half, and then you can release some pressure, and then you can build momentum going forward. But until you hold the ball up, none of those things are going to happen.
Man of the match in this game, Marc-Andre ter Stegen. Again, is it a good thing or a bad thing when you're getting your goalkeeper getting multiple Man of the Match awards in games?
It's a usual thing with Barcelona, we have to say, with ter Stegen, and you take it. Listen, when you want your goalkeeper to step up and be counted, and you need him, it's great that you have somebody like Ter Stegen with his consistency that you can rely on. But it of course, as everybody's already said, this has not been a great Barcelona performance. To get 3 points, you need Ter Stegen to step up. On the one hand, if you're Xavi, you're going back into the dressing room and you're relying on the old cliche that good teams sometimes play poorly but pick up 3 points. And you use that to paper over the cracks. But it's difficult when you have, what's this, no, 3 really poor performances in a row. I think there's enough of a buffer between Barcelona and 5th place. I think it's 6 points that suggests that Barca should finish in the top 4 and bring Champions League football back. But there's nothing right now that's reassuring otherwise about that performance. They're going to see settle for 4th. There's nothing else on offer. Let's just get to the end of the season and figure out exactly who we are and build on what has been encouraging so far under Xavi for next season.
And is that just the best way to look at it, do you think, right now, Pablo, with the way that the season has played out for Barcelona, to just ensure that's done and worry about nothing else right now?
Well, listen, you know, I think, you know, for Barcelona team and for the coach, Xavi, he said that a few weeks ago, you know, when he want to see the team playing attracting football and all that. But, you know, he's done an incredible job since he came into the club. You know, they were a mid-table, you know, position, and now they're second. So doing a good job. He's not been brilliant, but his main target for this season is to qualify for the Champions League, then give him a chance to build a team and see how he goes. But you know, for me, it's all about winning now for Barcelona. It was today, Real Sociedad away from home, it's always a difficult place to go and get results, and they've not been great in the second half, but I mean, they got the 3 points, and this is what Xavi should be proud of, and you know, they need to continue like that. A lot of Pedri is not a team, which is the player, you know, they made a difference for them. And then, you know, see if they can make that Champions League spot. That's massive for them. So it's all about winning now. Maybe playing in ugly, but they lost to Cadiz. Today, they won it. So that is, it's all about 3 points, you know?
Yeah, of course. Just before we do move on, would Ale have scored that Aubameyang goal, in your opinion, Shaq?
Come on, Shaq.
It is Moreno Reed.
Yes.
But I think there were two defenders too many between
what?
Between Aubameyang and the goal line.
What? Controversy.
Ali specializes in 2 or 3 inches from the goal line with nobody within 4 or 5 yards.
Wide open.
That's his
and
specialty.
No goalkeeper.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. That's
very good at
he
that.
Excels.
Deadly.
Barcelona will be looking to build some momentum now that they do have this win under their belt when they are back in action on Sunday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern. Our coverage will begin. It is Barcelona taking on Rayo Vallecano at the Camp Nou. Make sure you catch that on ESPN Plus.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Neymar's back in the news after being criticised by his compatriot, former Liverpool player Fabio Aurelio. He says the ambitions he has and for the quality and talent he has, the fact that he has never won a Ballon d'Or feels wrong. He has all the conditions to do it, but I don't know what's happened. Maybe some things are more important to him than the game. I don't know. He is still Neymar and capable of doing things that you don't expect, but you see now he's not as fit as he used to be. I always say that I would be very disappointed if I were him. So that's another player, along with Shaka Hislop, that Neymar can add to the no Christmas card list. Shaka. So there we go. On Fabio Aurelio's comments, Neymar said back, morally, I'm fed up with these ex-players who are there and only open their mouths to say bleep. Uh-huh. 5 minutes of interview and all he did was talk about other people's lives. If you want to criticise, criticise. But talking bleep like that is not possible. We're going to let Jules defend his best friend Neymar here.
It's not about defending. I think we all agree that if you look at the 14-15 season with Barcelona, the one that they end up winning the Champions League, Neymar is incredible that season. And back then, it looks like, yes, he was the next one to come after Messi and Cristiano and all of that. And we all thought that he could become that player. He could become the best in the world without even a debate. Things haven't just turned that way. Was the move to Paris right? Maybe, maybe not. Has he lost his way a little bit along the way? Certainly. I think he will admit that he's been tough at times. Maybe had he stayed, he would have not struggled in the way that he did at times in Paris, or maybe he would still have struggled. I don't know. The fight is now, it's too late. I mean, Fabio Aurelio can say whatever he wants. I mean, I don't even know who Fabio Aurelio is really compared to Neymar in terms of talent and all of that. But that's not the point here. The point is that, yeah, of course, we all expected more and better from Neymar, and he hadn't got to that level. And now it's too late.
Obviously, Brazil are favourites to win the World Cup, the World coming up in November and December. Pablo, how important is it for Brazil to win that World Cup for Neymar's legacy?
I don't care about Brazil. I'm just thinking about Argentina, okay? I'm just waiting for Messi to win it.
Good answer.
I think, listen now, seriously, I mean, for this kind of players, Neymar, I mean, I played many times against prime Neymar, and he was absolutely, you know, a nightmare to play against him. He's a really good player, and For all these guys, I mean, the world, winning the World Cup would be massive. For Messi, Cristiano, we all waiting for all of us that we love football. We want to see them really enjoying the World Cup and shining and all that. You know, obviously, I don't want Brazil to win it. But obviously, it's a big chance for players like Neymar and all of them to enjoy the World Cup, to have a good performance, enjoy it and win it, of course.
Pablo's absolutely fuming now. I think he's crossed me off his Christmas card list for even mentioning Brazil and winning the World Cup in the same sentence. What do you reckon, Ali?
When you evaluate Neymar and his career, it's so very difficult. It's not very straightforward. It's very nuanced because there's no doubt that the talent level was for him to be at an elite level for a long, long period of time. And while we still think of him as elite because of what we've seen him do on the field, the results don't actually match that level of performance. The results don't actually match the expectations. And the expectations with Brazil, the expectation with PSG, at his time in Barcelona, as good as it was, he was the second guy because, well, Messi was there. And so the move to PSG was supposed to be the liberation of Neymar, the moment in which he becomes his own man, his own player. Here we go. This is my team. This is where we take my career to an entirely different level, the level that we expected him to be. And he didn't get there. And I think for Neymar, that level of expectation, it's a moving target. And while we think that he could and should be better, maybe he's just comfortable where he is. Maybe this is as good as it's gonna get. We think he can be better. Maybe in quiet moments, does he have the fire and the drive to get to that point? And I think that's where Fabio Aurelio is getting to, is that we would all give everything we have to have the talent that Neymar has. Because you would think, if I match that talent with my work rate, man, I'm unstoppable. But I never had that talent. You never had that talent, Shaq, right? And so for us lesser players, when we see a talented player like Neymar, elite level sort of talent, that he's not matching the expectations, that he's not really maximizing what he can be, it is frustrating. Because you wish you had that position. You wish you were in his body and said, all right, just give me that one body. Just give it to me for a year, and I'll make it work. I'll sort out the rest of my career after that. Give me that sort of talent, and I'll do the rest. I think at times Neymar has taken his talent for granted.
Are you jealous that somebody else has been criticizing him?
No, I'm happy to have somebody else on the bandwagon. Listen, the thing for me is, I always feel that Neymar's energies have been misdirected, if I can put it that way. And you look back over the course of his career, Jude mentioned the 2014-2015 season, where I think he was the heir apparent to Lionel Messi. Mm-hmm. And even if you want to go a little bit further back than that, injured in 2014 World Cup, which had to impact him. And then Brazil go crashing out in 2018. The move to PSG never felt like a good footballing decision. But it was packaged as needing to get out from the shadow of Lionel Messi to win the Ballon d'Or. Again, and it's just misdirected, in my opinion, when we're talking about the game. When we talk about the game, you're talking about lifting the biggest of silverware available to you, not individual trophies, individual accolades. And so it didn't feel right, and the way it's worked out, it wasn't right. And now you come into criticism, and rather than try to address that criticism on the field, you are taking pot shots at everybody who dares to criticize you. And while, to Jules's point, Fabio Aurelio doesn't have Neymar's talent, the two most criticized players in today's football are Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. Yet every single other person on the planet is below them talent-wise. Mm. That's a part, when you are that quality of player, that's a part of the job. Just enduring that criticism and proving it otherwise, or disproving it on the park. Yet he wants to disprove it any other way but on the park. And so, which is why I have no sympathy at all with Neymar, because his energies continue to be directed entirely in the wrong place. And until he accepts that this is who he is and this comes as part and parcel of being an elite player in today's game, I don't think he ever gets it back on track. I don't think he ever gets back to being that player that we all thought he could be in 2015.
It's too many highs and lows with Neymar. See, he loves the adulation and the attention when he is thriving on the field. But then he hates the negative attention that, and the criticism. Well, somewhere in there, you got to find that happy medium in which you don't care either way, right? That you're going to perform regardless. Regardless of the adulation, regardless of the criticism, it's still your responsibility to perform. And that is the part in which he has come up short. While he has directed his energy in the wrong way, that has taken away from the most important thing, and that is the performance on the field. That's why we like Neymar, because of what he can do on the field. I don't care about what Neymar does off the field. Jules does, because he goes to his parties, right? But I don't care what he does off the field, so long that as on the field, he is performing at the highest level possible. That is what we want from Neymar, and that's what he should want from himself. I don't know whether he wants it right now.
Okay, well, we know that Pablo wants to go after how this segment started. He needs to go meditate, do some yoga. Forget I ever mentioned what I mentioned.
Oh, dear.
Argentina.
Oh, dear.
Come on, Messi. Let's win Brazil. The final.
Yeah, we're good. He sounds like he's got over it. He's not joining us for extra time because he's still annoyed, though. Anyway, the rest of the guys are. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube page and you can stay up to date with all the questions on Extra Time.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The most important part of Thursday's ESPN.
Wait a second.
not a whole lot of change. Let me just put that out there. West Ham draw, Eintracht Frankfurt lose. Ajax lose a cup final, so they're out. In Porto can just on this incredible run. Bayern Munich are back in just because.
Just because that's a reason.
By default. I think their only blip came against Villarreal, so I've got to allow Bayern Munich that.
What?
Because you know what, Ale? You know what he did last week? Because they have a long memory. He just looked at all the semi-finalists and went, they're all in.
Lola. And now he's just cast it was them last aside. Week. What do you mean you've got a long memory? It was last week.
So Bayern Munich, right, they get bounced out of Champions League.
Yeah.
By Villarreal.
Yeah.
And then their big result was beating Arminia Bielefeld.
Yeah,
over the weekend, and that gets them back into.
But they're just romping away. It's romping away. It's a whole package, right? Everybody else outside of those in European action. You have to. There's a lot of give and take. You know, there's a lot of. They've lost some here. They've lost a couple here. So you take the package.
You said romping away. What?
Romping away in the Bundesliga. In the Bundesliga.
When was it your computer crashed?
It was. I was putting in my data today. For Google and the algorithm. And the computer crashed.
And right.
Oh.
Yes.
Disney
couldn't handle the data load into the top.
Don is not having it, I don't think.
Shaq, did you have Inter Milan at 7?
I think so, yeah.
Why?
Because they're second with a game in hand and the fourth team in Serie A.
Oh, and we thought they did this week.
I don't know.
Who's got the best form?
Your memory isn't that long. What?
Roma. What was that? Unbeaten in 12. Roma, unbeaten in 12. Drew in Napoli on Monday.
Good.
Good for Roma.
Good for Roma.
Anything else, Don? Anything else, Don?
I mean, Bayern. I mean, It's just one of Shaka's.
They're romping away. Don.
Shaka's just looked at it. He's gone, get all the big teams in. Don't care how they're doing. Let's get Liverpool and City in. We'll forget about Jose's Roma. We'll forget how they're doing.
Did you just pick on Liverpool and City there? Goodness.
Well, hang on. Do you want to talk about City's form, Shaq?
Where are you looking, Shaq?
I don't know.
Do you want to talk about Man City's form, Shaq?
Is that where we're going, Dom? We're going to pick on City here?
Well, do you want to talk about their form?
Not particularly, but seems like you want to. I don't know where you're going with this.
Well, before City the Brighton be the, win...
Are you
before,
saying City shouldn't be the top 10? Is that where we're going?
Before the Brighton win, it was 2 draws in 5.
Yeah, City shouldn't be in, Don, you're right.
But not second.
Jules?
I think Shaka blaming his computer crashing for this terrible power ranking is one of the worst excuses since Thomas Tuchel blamed the pitch for the Arsenal defeat. This is that level. And like Shaka said on the show to Tuchel, I'll paraphrase it, but Shaka, you lost me there.
Well, you do know that the first thing that Shaka did when I came into the office today, as Shaka is in front of his computer, he asked me the question, is your computer working correctly?
Mm.
And I turned on my computer and it was working correctly. And then he turned and said, I'm just inputting a lot of data for the power ranking, it's not working. The computer knew it was nonsense. The computer was saying, no! No, Shaq! Reconsider!
I'm blaming the pitch. I'm going with Jules.
I'm blaming
the pitch.
You can catch Shaq's power rankings weekly on our YouTube channel. Make sure to subscribe over there. It has the receipts, so you can see what he said last week.
He has a long memory.
My long memory. Actually, YouTube has an even longer memory than me.
No!
Well, that is all we've got time for on the latest edition of Extra Time. But if for some reason you want a bit more from these guys, Don and Jules are sticking around too, and they'll be answering your questions on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We found out today just how high Shaka can speak.
Yes, we did, Shaka.
Okay, let me just see, right?
Area, we're all coming around the ESPN studio.
I hold you to far higher esteem than this mob.
Let's tell the people the true story.
Right? This is not a true story. Most people
are now allowed to come back into the office, right? We're all coming back. Mm-hmm. Now, we've been here the whole time. We've not gone anywhere.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Hard workers that we are.
Yeah.
In any case, so we see somebody, or Shaka sees somebody who he hadn't seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. And this guy, who never gets up off his chair because, you know, that would entail some effort, he goes, hi! So good to see you! And I'm looking like... Who's he talking to? I hadn't seen that happiness from you since Carnival.
You see, while I expect this level of immaturity from Alejandro, I expected so much more. I hold you in far higher esteem than I do these lot.
You've never spoken to me with such a high voice, so now I feel all offended that you're not happy to see me.
Oh, goodness me. Right. Yeah, we go. You see?
I'm just saying.
It's me.
Don. First question for you.
Thank you.
Don, as someone that knows both sets of fans well, do you think Liverpool fans want Everton to stay up, if just for the local rivalry?
No. Liverpool fans want Everton gone. Very sad, but they do. They do. I honestly don't get it. I've said I'm a Newcastle fan and I play for Sunderland, and I'm passionate about Northeast football. And I always say, when Sunderland went down, Middlesbrough as well, it's like you want the derbies. That's what keeps it alive in the area. And if Everton went out of the division, went out of the Premier League, it would be so sad not having a Merseyside derby, which has just been going forever. I get the tribalism,
I get the hatred between different sets of fans, but it would be pretty sad if it happened.
Ali, you seem to rate both Vinicius and Pedri a lot, mm-hmm. but if you have to choose one, who will you choose and
Pedri.
Why?
Pedri. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
He would trade his son for Pedri.
Would
and
you?
And so would you. You were in the same conversation. Don't just put me out
no,
there.
No, I wouldn't.
So love you, son. Don't go back on it. No. Roll the tape.
Which is our camera. That one. Love you, son. I wouldn't.
Pedri is the answer.
Pedri's the answer, yeah. You may have heard that Ali would trade his own son for Pedri.
Yes, I would.
Yes.
Done.
Yes, I would.
Yes, he would.
Wow. If Ali had a two-seater car, Ali had a two-seater car, was going somewhere with his son, and Pedri's car broke down.
Yeah, get
Ali Jr. Ali Jr. Would be walking.
Yeah, catch the bus home, son.
Yes.
I hope you do well. Ali Pedri, Jr. come in.
Yeah, come on in, Pedri.
Don, percentage chance of Lukaku playing for Chelsea next season amidst reports of Milan offering Romelu Lukaku a Chelsea exit depending on the outcome of their current takeover?
I don't see how he stays. It's got to be low. I mean, he's on absolute fortunes and it's going to cost fortunes for someone to buy him. So that might bring the percentage numbers up slightly. But I would say 20% that he stays.
But Milan, when he played for Inter and said all that he did and all those wonderful things about what it was like to be at Inter.
But PSG might be a little sniff from PSG, Jules, what do you reckon?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. I think this is a really tricky one because the wages, as you said, Don, they're huge. Chelsea would want as much money as possible to recoup after the £100 million deal from last summer. So it's a tricky one. I see him staying and then Tuchel trying to again integrate him a bit better than he did this season.
Jules is way too kind. Don asked Jules about
Lukaku
to PSG, and Jules being the nice man, he's just like, oh, it's tricky there, Don. Well, the truth is, what he says, Don, where you come up with that? That's what Jules really wants to see. What nonsense you talking? But Jules, being the nice guy, it's tricky.
If we are all at boardroom level, I think Jules needs to go. I think he needs to go. He's too on the fence, boardroom level for us. We need more emotion.
Hang on a minute, but we have to all agree with that. Who wants Jules to go? Hand up.
Wait, is it a choice between Jules and Dom? Is it a choice between Jules and Dom?
Because that's a different conversation.
Yeah, well. If I just want all the power for myself, that's one thing. But
start being mean girls over
there. No.
Don't blow yourself to Don's level.
I just want to know what kind of boardroom is it? Is Don saying this boardroom ain't big enough for the two of us in his best cowboy voice? It's not big enough for the two of us. Laurent, I don't know where are we going with this.
Well, I've got the next question.
Okay,
ready?
Let's go up to the next one.
This was for Jules. It has to be for Jules. Jules, explain Arsenal.
Oh, yeah.
Explain Arsenal, that's the question.
Explain Arsenal.
That's the whole question.
Oh, I don't know where we start. I do think that Arteta does a lot of things right. I've been really impressed by what he's done at training to start with, from what I'm being told to what we've seen on the pitch. The thing is, I think what he wants the team to do at times fails in a way because in certain positions the level is not there. I think if you give him better players, because the structure for me is so elite and what he wants to do tactically with the ball and again without the ball with his starting 11, I think if he gets better players in certain key positions, I think this team is a top four contender every single season. And that's how impressed I was. The problem is, at times you can have the structure and all the goodwill in the world and all the tactical knowledge, some players might let you down, and even collectively. And I think that's what we saw certainly at Crystal Palace, where the team didn't really respond to what they should have done for a game like that. At Southampton, I think Fraser Foster was on one of those days that When we saw the Burnley game tonight, for example, it was a different Fraser Foster. It was his twin. So things like that happen. And that's why I think it's a bit hard to explain the season and why there's been highs and lows. But I do think they're certainly on the right path.
The explanation from Jules was as clear as Don's percentages. Yeah? Quite confusing.
Well, I mean, Arsenal have been quite confusing over the years, so he did his best. Okay, Jules, there's another one for you, actually, and this is the last one.
Here we go.
Jules, any truth that Bale and Chiellini are considering moves to MLS next season?
Well, we certainly saw the reports about DC United calling Jonathan Barnett and Gareth Bale's people to see if he would want to go to the US. I think Chiellini, not so sure, but for Gareth Bale, I think this would be perfect. I mean, obviously, as the boys know, the US is where you find the most golf courses, so that it would be right in his element to start with, and then more seriously, I think if he wants to take that step into his career for the last few years and maybe not stay in Europe, not coming back to England, I would love personally to see him back in Cardiff, for example. But if he wants something completely different, different lifestyle, different life, full stop for him and the family, I think he could have a few good years in MLS for sure.
Whatever you may think of Gareth Bale and his inability to stay fit, his inability to play for Real Madrid on a consistent basis, or inability to produce for Real Madrid, the truth is that right now, at this very moment, you put Gareth Bale in an airplane and you drop him in any team in MLS, he automatically, 100%, with certainty, becomes the best player in Major League Soccer. Now, whether he can play, whether he can be fit enough, whether he's going to be playing golf, whether he's going to be focused enough, whatever other concerns you may have, okay, those are fair questions to ask. But in terms of ability, he becomes the best player in Major League Soccer. That's it, and that cannot be argued. And whoever wants to have a discussion about that, it's nonsense. Gareth Bale is that talented and would be better than everybody else around him.
And that was a very clear percentage there. Now,
yes. We
started the segment by saying, hi!
Okay, well.
So we're going to end the segment by saying, bye! Thanks so much for your questions. Extra time. We'll be back again tomorrow
to
do it all again.
No. What?
Come on. You said it.
This silly
you
game.
Said it. Say
I'm
bye, Shaq.
Playing a silly game.
You're so
with
mean.
You two.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at LectricEbikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LectricEbikes.com.